listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have one of the baddest and best singers in Los Angeles, maybe the world, Mr. How are you, Maurice?
I'm good. What's going on, man? How you been?
Chilling. I've been good. I don't use those words lightly, but I really do feel you are one of the best singers in this city, maybe the world. And first, I want to talk about your basketball jerseys. Magic's my favorite player in the world of all time. I love that you got Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and is that Jordan's USA jersey? Is that right?
Yeah, that's the USA jersey there.
So solid, dude. That is awesome. Did you see any of them play?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I never got to see them in person, but I definitely saw them growing up.
I never saw Larry live, but I saw Magic a lot. I never saw Jordan live, and I tease my mom all the time. She's listening right now, too, because, like, I remember when we were kids, we went to go get, Lakers tickets, and I think the Chicago Bulls tickets, like, way up in the back, they were $60, and then, you know, the Denver Nuggets tickets were $34, and she's like, why do you need to go see the Bulls? Go see the Denver Nuggets. They're $34. So I saw the Denver Nuggets, and I always joke with her now. I'm like, you know, I never got to see Michael Jordan because of $26. I wish I could have just spotted, you know, at the time. But I did see Magic quite a bit, and I watched a lot of games, as I'm sure you did too. And between those three, if you had to rank them, how would you rank them as far as maybe impact or your favorite players?
I mean, definitely Jordan, Magic, and Bird for me.
Ah, good man. I like that. I think Magic made the ordinary player like a star. So I always think like he's my favorite player for that reason. But Jordan is the GOAT, obviously. Six championships, no lie. Larry was like one of the best shooters. Like just those three are, I think, the most iconic basketball players that will ever play the game. And I would put honorable mentions. I'd probably say Kobe Bryant. And I'd maybe say LeBron. I'd say those are the honorable mentions. Maybe Kareem, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe some more Laker love in there. I don't know. Are the Lakers not your team, I assume, right? Because you're from
Mississippi. No, they're not my team. But, you know, definitely I've been in L.A. for 20 years. So, you know, you definitely got to have some Laker love.
Absolutely. So who is your team or who are your favorite players now?
The Bulls have always been my favorite team. You know, growing up in the 90s, you know, you definitely, you know, everybody was a Jordan fan, especially in Mississippi, since we didn't have a team in Mississippi. So it was definitely the Bulls.
Well, and also, like, you chose a great team to be a fan of because Pippen, Jordan, I mean, they were loaded. I mean, I used to watch the Bulls when they had Cartwright, you know, like they were like just – they weren't the team that they became in the 90s. But I used to watch them and say, man, they're going to be something. I watched the Slam Dunk Championship live when Jordan and Dominique Wilkins were the two last contestants. And it was, that's when he did the free throw slam dunk. I mean, it was just crazy. Like, he was just the best, you know, he's the best.
Yeah. And no, I remember that. Cause I was in the mall with my mom. Yeah. We were missed the whole thing because, you know, my mom really didn't care about that stuff. So yeah, no, but I just remember watching it in Radio Shack. You know,
that's awesome. Well, I mean, it was astounding, you know what I mean? Like, to see somebody just like, I think Jordan's hang time is what is the most underrated part of like his skills. Like, it is crazy how much hang time he would just have, even when he would just shoot. You know, he would just like, sometimes he'd go up and like players would try to defend him and he would just hang there and be it down. It was so crazy. So
yeah, dude was like a feather. Like you just throw a feather up and just watch it. Okay, when is it coming?
I know you watched the movie that came out about him with the shoe deal, right?
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So good. So good. I mean, it was kind of cool because it's like, I wanted Jordan to be more involved, but it was kind of cool that it was about his mom, you know, like, and how she orchestrated a lot of that. But anyways, let's get back to your music. Maurice, you really are one of the best singers. I know your Instagram is singing since three. So tell me, what was that first moment you started singing when you were three?
Man, so I grew up with a very musical family. Like both sides of my family were really musical. Yeah, you know, growing up in the church in the South, yeah, you're definitely going to pick up some of that. So it was just a part of who I was. I've always been singing. Like I can't remember a time that I wasn't singing.
That's amazing. Were you singing in the gospel choirs? Were you singing at home, like picnics, any and everywhere? Were you in a group or anything like that?
Well, I didn't really sing in church. Like one of the main places that we used to sing were, it was, I mean, we had the children's program, like children's right. Christmas programs in church, but mainly I was singing. I got a lot of my training in school, like the school choirs.
That's awesome. So they had good music programs then.
Oh no, we had one of the best musical programs in the world. Like we used to, our high school choir, you know, we would go to Vienna, we would go to all wow. the like international competitions. Like there's one of the top choral programs in the world.
That's amazing. I mean, that I don't feel like it is, it's not a coincidence that you happen to live in a music program that was thriving like that, because it totally makes sense. And were you singing like all styles? Were you doing a little bit of classical? Were you doing a little bit of jazz, or was it mostly R&B and pop tunes?
It was choral. So it was classical. We did a lot. Like we did a lot of singing in like Latin. We were singing in Italian. it's crazy because we were school in the middle of the inner city, like wow. like we were surrounded by, you know, abandoned homes and everything. Like you would never know that we were singing like Latin songs.
That's amazing. So there must have been a music director that had a vision, or somebody that had a big music background to support the program. Who was that person?
Yeah, the director, his name was Mr. James Salk, and he's rest his soul. He just passed about 3 months ago, but he definitely like he took all of us and just like instilled like that work ethic and just trained us on how to sing. Like he was such a great teacher that when I got to college, I tried to get into a musical program. And just the teaching from the professor wasn't on par with what he taught us.
I can imagine. I can sense that, because you definitely came in like guns a-blazing with your musical talent even when you just came to LA. So it makes sense. I actually started in a church choir, and then we started singing classical music, same kind of thing. And I was in a professional children's chorus. So we did like European tours. We did a lot of that stuff too. But it wasn't through a public school program, that's for sure. So, like, it was a very, like, well-organized thing. I came from pretty good music programs, but not like yours. Like, that is really amazing that he had that much vision. Did you have to do, like, rehearsals after school? Like, what were the rehearsals like?
And so, so we had, we had the main choir. Then we had the men's choir, and then we had the quartet. So the quartet, we rehearsed in the morning. So we rehearsed early in the morning, right before school started. So about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, we would do the quartet rehearsal. Then, you know, we had a period in school. It's like sixth or seventh period where all the upper class choir members would come in for those two classes. So that's when we'd do the rehearsals with the entire choir. And wow. then like for like the statesmen or or whatever. That's what the men's choir was called, the Statesman. We were rehearsed after school. So, it was just a full day of singing. And this was on top of a lot of us being on the basketball team, in the band, drill teams.
But that's amazing because you kind of build a community that way. It's like you start making friendships and bonds that are in those groups that have like similar interests, or you. So you're like probably also hanging with them outside of school and making music or playing basketball or doing those things that are like all in the same thing. So it builds like really good musical bonds and friendship bonds. You know, I think that's the coolest thing about having a community like that, because it's like it just helps you kind of like have a positive outlook on things.
Most definitely. Like, because we, you know, Mississippi, well, where I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, is not a big city. Like, that's the capital city, is like 200,000 people. So the school was pretty small. So, you know, you already going to school with people that you've grown up with since kindergarten. So it's like that bond was definitely there.
Were you a point guard or were you a shooting forward?
Well, yeah, I was like a power forward, no, small forward, because you know our team wasn't that tall. You know, high school.
Oh, you're pretty tall, so like that's why I was asking. I'm like you could be a point guard, but I'm like you could be a forward.
Yeah, no, I got the short end of the stick in my family. Like I have cousins that's like 6'7", 6'8". Like, bro, what happened to me?
So what was the moment that you knew you wanted to pursue music and just do it full time?
Man, honestly, like I really didn't have aspirations of being a professional singer. Like I wanted to be an ad agent. Like that's what I wanted to do. Yeah.
Right. Why and how did you have that epiphany?
Like I always loved business. Like I'm a very business minded person, and marketing and advertising was something that just always drew closer to like marketing and advertising. So that was really what I wanted to do. That's what I got my degree in. Like that's the reason why I moved to Los Angeles.
Wow, really? To do like a marketing job?
Yeah, I had a job that I interviewed for in Mississippi, and I didn't get it in Mississippi. So the guy that interviewed me said he had a position in Los Angeles. So I was like, yeah, I have family out there. I'll go out there and take that job. So, you know, came out here, and you know, that's how I got to LA.
And then when was the pivot that you started kind of dabbling more in music?
I always recorded. I always like, you know, I would always go to like the jam sessions and stuff. And, you know, because I moved out here with a friend of mine who was a producer. So I would always like, you know, I was always surrounded in the music world. But it wasn't until like, you know, George Bush messed the economy up and we lost all our jobs that I was like, OK, might as well.
Right. And you've had a very storied career. You've sung with Beyonce. You've sung with Seal, Too Short, Kanye West. Like, were you just kind of like going from gig to gig, networking? Were you kind of like being referred? Like, how did, I mean, I know anybody that hears you sing is like, we need Maurice on this gig because you just got golden pipes. Great voice. So, but how did it work for you? I mean, I know coming to LA, like I'm from LA. So it's like, you know, you see a lot of people come and go in this city. You see a lot of people like, you know, kind of try to learn this city. And it is an ongoing process how to learn how this city works. And, you know, either slams doors on you or opens doors on you. That is a constant learning process. So tell me what that was like for you when you first came here.
Man, when I first got out here or started gigging, it was all referral based. You know, like you would go to the jam sessions and guys would be like, hey, I got this little opportunity that I'm working on. They were asking them for singers. So would you like to do it? Like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, yeah, that'd be cool. And so, you know, that's basically how I built my career. I could say that I've probably been on probably been on like 3 or 4 auditions my entire time that I've been in LA.
Wow, that's not that many. If people think they're crazy, because that's very few. So like most of the things that you're doing, it's like people hear you sing and then you're kind of, you know, being referred to doing another gig. Were you ever like, okay, I'm caught between two things I love. Which one do I choose? Because that's always the story in LA. When things are hot, you kind of are in between like, oh my God, I either have to choose this road or this path or this opportunity. Have you ever been in that opportunity where you were just kind of like at a crossroads, you didn't know which opportunity to take because they were in conflicting schedules?
Well, I've been fortunate enough that really hasn't happened. You know, you get a lot of, you know, of conflicted of interest on, you know, like regular gigs and stuff like that. But as far as like, you know, touring opportunities, I've been fortunate enough that it's come to me one at a time that I've been able to just focus on what I, you know, the task at hand instead right. of being like, oh man, I don't know if I should take this gig or I should take that. Like, how are they going to feel? Like, I've been very fortunate in that aspect.
What's a pinch me moment that you had when you were singing where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this right now? What's one of those moments for you?
I mean, the pinch me moment was definitely the Beyonce gig. Like that one was a real pinch me moment because when they called us for that gig, like a couple friends of mine were playing with her, and so they called me and asked if I was free on a couple of days. You know, if you know anybody that works with Beyonce, you can't say that you're working with Beyonce. so they didn't tell me what it was for. It was just like, yeah, are you available these days? Like, can you come to this rehearsal studio? All right, cool. I pretty much have an idea of what it's for or who it's for. But, you know, I don't really know for sure. So you get to the studio. First thing they do, they give you, you know, the NDA packet like this thick. So we're signing it. I'm reading through it. It still doesn't say a name. It still doesn't say the artist name. So then you get into the rehearsal studio, and there's Beyonce right there. That was like my pinch me moment.
That's awesome. And she was cool. I assume she was cool.
No, she's one of the coolest. Like, she's one of the best. She's probably one of the best gigs that I've worked.
That's amazing. And you were doing stuff for The Lion King. What was the stuff you were doing?
We did The Lion King. Then we did The Lion King soundtrack, and then we did a Grammy performance where she did the Precious Lord live. We did that.
That's amazing. That must have been so cool that you're just like in a rehearsal space or a studio and like, oh, there's Beyonce. Oh, yeah, we're running this thing. That must have been like, it was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And were you kind of like sight reading stuff? Were you kind of like, was it well rehearsed? Like you could feel arrangements? Were you arranging stuff on the spot with the music director? Like, how did that work?
No, they had the arrangement already. They had already been rehearsing for this for about, I think they said they had been rehearsing for that for almost a month once we got in. Yeah. So once we got there, the song was already arranged and we just had to come in and sing the parts. And with Beyonce, she's such a well-oiled machine and she's such a perfectionist. Like, you know, her rehearsal is the show. Like, she's doing, like, she's singing full out every time we run the song. Yeah, like, she's not whispering. She's singing the song full out. She does a whole wardrobe, the whole wardrobe, whole makeup, hair, and everything. Like, she's going full out. So, you know, like, she was just, like, she was a perfectionist. And it was amazing just being able to just watch that and see that, you know, every day.
Well, she's like the female Michael Jackson now. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
like top of the heap and that level of production. I mean, you don't see a lot of people, and you know this, like you don't see a lot of people rehearsing like that. Like,
yeah, no.
David's voices are there marking, okay, this is what's going to happen here. You don't see it until the performance, but it's kind of cool that you got to see all of that before anybody else did, you know?
Yeah, no, like it was like full out, like, you know, and they're recording everything, like every take was being recorded, like we were on the show. So, you know, they were doing their marking there, they were doing the lighting, like the light show and everything, like everything was done like full out. And like you could not sit there and half ass the show, like, because, you know, you had to go.
Right. Right. And it's like, if she's putting on that full on effort, everybody else better be too. So it's like,
yeah,
an artist, like, you know, I had a musician who plays, he plays with Bruce Springsteen, Tom Petty. And he was telling me, he's like, it always trickles down from the top. And I'm like, ooh, yeah. He's like, it ain't going to be good if it's not good from the top. And it's like, it'll be good if whatever's like, whoever's on top is putting in the effort and digging in and doing the thing, you know? And I'm like,
exactly.
So it totally makes sense. What's the biggest thing you learned in that process or that experience?
Just in the whole process, I learned to, like, just don't half-ass it. Like, if you're going to do it, then just go for it. I mean, we're talking about Beyonce. She, at that point, she was still like the biggest act in the world. And she's like, she's going out, like, you know, just putting her whole effort into everything. It's like, yo, if she's not half-assing it, then I shouldn't either.
Yeah. I mean, she's kind of always been like that. I used to read articles that her dad would make, you know, Destiny's Child. He would make them run the track and sing vocals, like sing
to their,
because they were doing dance moves and all that stuff. So he wanted to make sure that their choreography and everything was never going to, you know, kind of interfere with their stamina, their breath support and control. Like, that is awesome. So it makes sense that if she was learning to train like that at an early age, that she's still doing it on that level like that. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
That must have been a cool experience. Now, let me tell you this. Let me ask you this. How did that kind of, you know, spill over into your solo stuff? Like, you had to take some of those things you learned and kind of like put it into your solo work to kind of like put the first steps, you know, one step in front of the other. How did you kind of make that transition?
So with me, I'm more of a free flowing type of artist, you know. So like, just watching her, I was like, okay, you can't be too loose with it. You still have to have a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of structure and perfection to it. Like, you know, you're not going to be perfect, but you're going to strive for perfection.
Right. I love that. Well, let's play something first. What do you want to play us first? Which one of your songs do you want to play?
Man, let's do Lovesick. That was a single that we did, that we just released back in earlier part of this year. It's a soul, like a, you know, Mississippi soul style record, Motown Mississippi soul.
Awesome. Here's Marie Smith with Lovesick.
Just to be in your arms in the middle of the night. Girl, I'll do anything just to look in your eyes and see that pretty smile. I'll fight to the death a thousand men just to kiss your lips, girl. Ooh, that much more I'll do just to be with you. I'm a fool, I can have anyone in the world. But it's true, all I want, all I really ever want is you. And I'm lovesick, lovesick, trying to feel. keep you in my life for eternity. I'll be the biggest fool, I just can't help myself. I love you and no one else. I'll fight a thousand men to the death just to kiss your lips, girl. Ooh, that much and more I'll do just to be with you.
Smokey Robinson meets Sam Cooke hybrid.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Tell me what
Tell
me the inspiration behind the song, and then tell me the inspiration behind the sound.
The sound and the song was basically just the ode to like young Stevie Wonder. You know, I don't know if you heard the yeah, that was a little tribute.
Yes, it sounds like all the young Stevie Wonder, all the young Motown stuff. Like it's got. But it's got a lot of like, it really has a lot of Smokey influence, like especially in the sound of your voice. Like it's, it really.
Yeah, that first tenor, that falsetto is definitely Smokey Robinson esque, and then you know that just that feel of it is the young Stevie Wonder footprints that record. Yeah,
that you know what's cool is like I think the first time I ever saw you sing. You were singing a Stevie Wonder tune, and that is not an easy thing to do. Like you hear a lot of people sing Stevie Wonder and it's like, okay, it sounds like a Stevie Wonder cover. But when you sang Stevie Wonder, I was like, hot damn, dude, this guy sounds like Stevie Wonder. So I love Stevie Wonder's a major influence. So the sound and the inspiration, you want it to be like a modern throwback, right?
Yeah, that was definitely a modern throwback. You know, just, it's the whole renaissance of the whole Northern Soul movement, and like the whole Motown movement that, you know, that you hear a lot in the lowrider scene out here in L.A. So, you know, just wanted to pay a little tribute to that.
Well, it's so hooky, man. I mean, it's like you can't stop hearing that hook. Just well-crafted, well-written, well-sung, well-produced, well-recorded. How many days did it take you to record, write, and release that song? How long did it take you to do it?
Man, I wrote that song in one day. I recorded it over a period of time because we actually got this record back in 2015. Wow. So, yeah, this was right before my son was born. So we were working on that, and then I had to put it to the side because, you know, my son was premature, so I had to put it to the side for a little while. Right. And then, you know, once he got a little bit better, then I was able to come back to it and finish the recording process up.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm so glad that you came back to it. A lot of people sometimes when they leave a song like that, they don't always come back to it. And that was a great song to have finished, you know, like to get across the finish line. That must have been a good feeling to come back to it and have it sound like that when it was done.
I was definitely like impressed with the outcome of this record. Like this is, it's like, you know, you have a goal in mind of how you want it to sound. You know, I definitely wanted that whole, like I said, that whole Stevie Wonder, Motown-ish, early Stevie Wonder, like, sound. And just to hear it come out, like, the way that it was mixed, just, you know, the vocal mix was just, like, you know, perfect.
Yep, it's like that. It's like they have a little bit of slapback, a little bit of, like, that mono kind of mix. It just sounds like an old Motown tune that sounds better because it's modern day recording, you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
But you really capture that essence of the sound, and like, you know, there are a lot of producers that could have actually probably made it sound too poppy or too, you know what I mean? And it loses,
yeah,
classic edge. I love that you didn't do that. Like, you preserved that old 60s sound, that early 60s sound that's just so awesome.
It's, yeah,
just funky. It's like, it's infectious. It makes you want to dance. It makes you want to, like, you know, just makes you want to sing. And it's like an infectious melody too. Like, did you just kind of come up with the words first, the melody first? How did you kind of, well, what was the creative process for you?
I was humming the melody to it. So, you know, just like, you know, humming it out and then just trying to see, you know, which way I wanted to go with it. Like, that's my whole process, you know, just hum it out a little bit and just see where the story goes. Like, I don't come in with preconceived stories. Like, I don't write stories in my phone or whatever, or like, you know, I just try to see, you know, where the melody is going to take me.
Right. You know, I remember you and I wrote a song together, and I remember you started just humming a melody. That's exactly how it started. And
yeah,
I was impressed because it's like, you know, you always kind of like can see what somebody can do in the first 30 seconds of what a creative collaboration is going to be like. And it's like, man, you can write. You just, it comes to you. You don't have
Thank you, man.
It's like a very natural gift. It's very impressive, and it's very kind of like rootsy and technically proficient, but also it's got that soul that you just are born with. Like, you either have it or you don't. And my friend, you are born with it.
Thank you, man.
Shining like a North Star. Like, you really do have a great sound and a great musical sense. When you played it for the first person that wasn't you, what was their reaction? Do you remember that?
Oh man, the first person that heard it was the executive producer of the project. Once he heard it, you know, he's a very harsh critic. He was like, "Yeah, this is it. Like, this is what, you know, this is what he envisioned for the project," because he actually came up with the concept of doing the whole, you know, Northern Soul style, like, because that's his thing. He loves that whole Northern Soul, like, lowrider scene in LA, and he introduced me to that. And so once he heard it, he was like, "Yeah, this is definitely what I envisioned for this song."
Well, you nailed it, and I had no doubt you were gonna nail it, but you really did nail it. Like, it's still echoing in my head. It's such a strong hook, and you know, I've had some really good music mentors. One of my music mentors, he told me, he said, "You know, there's a good song when it echoes in your head after you play it," and it's like, that's your song right now. So it is, you know, it's just cool that you just laid it down and got it across the line that it sounds like that. You know, it's like fireworks. It's like instant ear candy. So let me
ask you, I appreciate that.
It's a great song. So after you do a song like that, how do you go in a different direction, or do you go in a different direction?
Man, I go into a lot of different directions. Like, you know, I love music, so I listen to a lot of different things. And right. So when I was writing this EP, I was actually working on a house record, because I do a lot of house music. And so, I was, you know, listening to a lot of the old Motown stuff, and then, you know, still going back and listening to a lot of old disco and a lot of the classic house records. So, you know, just listening to a lot of different things at one time. So it was just like, you know, just really studying the music at that point.
Yeah, you know, I love that when music kind of makes you, when somebody's so good in a style of music that it makes you want to go in that direction. That's one of my favorite things. When you hear somebody do something so well that you're like, oh, I want to do that sound. I want to do
that
direction. Because it's just like, it just teases your ear. You're like, wait a minute, that's cool. Whatever that is, I want to go down that. So I love that you're being influenced and pulled in a whole bunch of different directions, and also just creating in a whole bunch of different genres, because I think that's important part. Like, you learn the wheelhouse and you take things with you into your next record or your next project. So it's like really cool when artists are influenced by some of those, you know, outside influences that pull us in different directions. As far as major singers that influenced you, I know Stevie Wonder and probably Smokey Robinson and Sam Cooke are three singers that really heavily influenced you. But who else? Who else are some of your favorite singers?
Man, some of my favorite singers were Raphael Sadiq, Stokely from In Condition, and, you know, Brian McKnight was one of my favorite singers growing up. You know, it's such a disappointment to see where he's gone now. But, you know, he was definitely one of my biggest influence. And then Babyface as well. I love Babyface and his brother, Kevon Edmonds from After 7.
Yeah. So you like the R&B crooners.
Yeah, like the, you know, they were the singers who had voices similar to mine. So I was like, you know, like this, I gravitated to that, you know, trying to cultivate my voice just by, you know, listening to singers with similar timbre as mine.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's that you can't, those are undeniable singers, you know, like when you hear them, it's like, you know, how I was introduced to Brian tonight was, I'm sure you know this record. It was the Boys to Christmas album.
Oh, yeah. He did the Let It Snow. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the first things he did. And I was like, who is this? This is the best thing I've ever heard in my life. And then it's like, of course, he had a huge career with you know, all of his hits. He's actually one of the that I is still on my list. I want to see him live. I've never seen him live. I don't know if you've ever seen him.
I saw him live. I saw him live in Mississippi. I took a date to see him. And, he was amazing. He was amazing live.
Well, I have no doubt. I mean, he's one of the cats. You know what I mean? So I love that you're influenced by all those guys. Let's play something else of yours. What do you want to play next?
So this one is a house song that I did. This is a producer from overseas. He's from London, I believe. We worked on this record for about 2-3 years.
Wow.
And yeah, so the initial track was probably like a 10-minute to 13-minute track.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just like, so I wrote probably, you know, up into 4 minutes thinking, okay, this would be enough vocals for this. It was like, no, I want more. Give me different sections of this. Give me another section of this. So, you know, he cut it down to shorter. But it's just, you know, just so many different sections and just, you know, just exercising the writing ability. So this is the house record called Pusher Man.
Here's Maurice Smith with Pusher Man.
Thank you. Now she's home again, bound until the game.
was awesome. That was, oh, you know what was cool about that? It was like House meets Jamiroquai. It was like had some really cool funky vibes, but also EDM style too. It's like really, I know I actually write for a lot of DJs too, and like it's kind of fun to write in that capacity. You know, it's like I'm sure there's a little bit of a tug of war. I always have a little tug of war with some DJs. That's part of the fun too. Did you have any of that where you're like, yo, this doesn't be a 13-minute beat?
It wasn't really a tug of war. It was really just, you know, he just stretching the writing ability. Because like I said, I wrote like, you know, 3 to 4 minutes of it. And he was like, all right, give me another section, but, you know, switch it up. So, you know, that's why you hear like just the different styles, like with each verse and each chorus is like just different, a completely different style from the previous verse.
Right. And I know you were switching registers too. You were singing like in the upper register, then you had like some low verses. It was cool.
Yeah. But
I wanted to ask you, do you know how many octaves you can sing? Because you got a kind of like a pretty big one. You got a huge top end. I know that. But do you know how low you can sing? Have you ever kind of like checked it out on a piano or no, not yet?
I mean, I had to sing baritone in one of our choral competitions. So yeah, I can't. If push comes to shove, I can sing baritone. I try not to though.
I mean, I hear you as a tenor one. Are you a tenor one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally hear you as a tenor one. It's like whoever's making you sing baritone parts, it's like having a thoroughbred and just trotting around the track. Like, come on now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had to sing baritone in one competition, and then, you know, just you know, as a arrogant little kid, I sang alto for a couple gigs too. So I was like, hey.
Well, I sang as like a boy soprano, so I went soprano and then alto and then tenor. I was a tenor one maybe for 6 months, and it's been tenor two forever. Like I'm a tenor two. And I always like love tenor one voices because it's like, oh man, they like it's really hard to get up in these really high registers, and tenor ones just pop them off like it's nothing. It's like oh yeah, this is where I thrive. I just like can pop off high C's and D's like it's nothing. It's like, wait a minute, what?
It's pretty, yeah, like
it's impressive. It's impressive. Your vocal range is definitely impressive. Tell me what the inspiration behind the lyrical part of that song was.
Man, so once I got that track, I just kept hearing, you know, just like a junkie. So I was like, what can I do with that? Like I just kept hearing that little phrase in my head. So it's like I played around with that, you know, just to see where we can go. And then, you know, just the title Pusher Man just came to me like, oh man, you know, I can play off a little, you know, Curtis Mayfield. Yeah, you know, so it's like okay, like you're in love right now, and the girl you're in love right now is like with this, like, you know, like your pusher man that's just providing this little fix for you every now and then, you know. So
that's
where the story, yeah.
Well, it's also kind of like Pusher Man, the Curtis Mayfield tune. Like it's like he's kind of talking about those same kind of things in that song.
Yeah.
Cool. It's very cool. I wanted to ask you, do you ever, do you know who Lenny Williams is, the singer for Tower of Power, the original singer of Tower of Power?
Well, yeah, I actually was on a gig with him back in, I believe this was March, I was on a gig with him.
Wow. What was that like?
Oh man, that was like a masterclass watching him. Like just being on the side of the stage, well, backstage watching him was like, man, like, you know, doing the whole story that the, you know, cause I love you. Like, man, it was just like a masterclass watching him.
Yeah. He's like one of my favorite singers. And I think he's one of the most underrated singers. Like he never really got like that major push that he probably should have, but he's known to singers. You know, it's like, I feel like a lot of singers know him from Tower of Power, or just know his name because he's an unforgettable voice. Like to me, he's one of the best singers ever. And, you know, like he could have been the big R&B crooner. He had a solo career, but I mean, everybody knows him from Tower of Power originally. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
break. You know, it's just something powerful about his voice. You got a lot of that soul that in your voice and what you do. Let's play something else. I want to play all your songs. What do you want to play next?
This next one is a country. I've ventured it out into country.
Love it.
Yeah, so this one is called Outlaw on the Run.
Okay, we'll come back to the influences after we play it. Here's Outlaw on the Run by Maurice Smith.
Outlaw on the Run. Riding down into the valley, looking out, that's how she found me. She played me soft, she played me slow. Just how she found me, I don't know. Outlaw on the Run, I came to have some fun. I let my guard down, here I am, right here in her arms. Drinking moonshine and whiskey, took a shot and then she kissed me. She held my hand, I understand how I fell right into her plan. Her plan is to stay together, her plan is to be forever. Like an outlaw on the run, like an outlaw, like an outlaw. Running wild till the morning comes, like an outlaw on the run. Riding out from Mississippi, never thought that they would miss me. I pled my case, went on the run. Yeah, she found me with loaded guns. Drinking moonshine and whiskey, took a shot and then she kissed me. She held my hand, I understand how I fell right into her plan. Her plan's to stay together, her plan's to be forever. She got me riding towards the sun, like an outlaw on the run, like an outlaw. Drinking moonshine and whiskey, took a shot and then she kissed me. She held my hand, I understand how I fell right into her plan. Her plan's to stay together, her plan's to be forever. She got me riding towards the sun, like an outlaw on the run, like an outlaw, like an outlaw.
Slamming, dude.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
I gotta tell you, one of my songwriting students, one of my former songwriting students, is the guitarist for Shaboozy. I'm gonna send him that song and say, you gotta play this for Shaboozy. Because that is a great song, dude. That is, I know you got Mississippi roots and horseback riding and all of that. I've seen some of your posts about it. I love that you incorporated all of that in this music video. I love this style of music for you as one of the genres that you do. I hope you never stop writing in it. Was Beyonce's kind of like country influence, that record, part of that like spin? Or were you like always like, I want to do this because it's been a part of who I am forever and I want to write in this direction?
Well, like you said, you know, like my roots are, you know, like Mississippi. My granddad raised horses and cattle, like, you know, so basically grew up on a farm. So, you know, I always had that background. And then I've always been into rodeo. So I would always go out to the rodeo and stuff. And then back during the lockdowns, during COVID in 2020, we went out to the rodeo in Vegas. And for, you know, during the rodeo week, like it lasts for 2 weeks. And right. During the weekend, they have performances at one of the award ceremony places. And so I went to this show, and there was a guy there doing some Texas swing. Like the only thing I knew of country, well, I won't say the only thing I knew of country, but like the main type of country that a lot of people listen to is that old traditional country.
Right.
So everybody would always be like, man, Maurice, you should do country. And that I'm like, no, I'm not doing country. I don't want to do that old traditional stuff. Right. So when I went to see his show, he was doing honky tonk Texas swing. I was like, man, that's funky. Like, that's dope. Like, that's what I, like, if I was to do country, that's what I would do. So I actually started this project in 2020. And then once it became popular and stuff, I was like, once it became like this whole country movement, I was like, ah, man, I don't want to put it out now because everybody's going to think I'm following the trend.
No, it's still great. It's no bullshit. No bullshit. It's one of the best country songs I've heard in a long, long, long time. And I I love country music. That is one of the best country songs I've heard in a very long time. It's well crafted, well sung, well written. The video's cool. You're riding a horse. I mean, not a lot of country stars do that either, you know what I mean? So it's genuine, it's honest, it's real, and that's what makes it fantastic. It's a great song. I'm gonna send it to my student to play for Shaboozy. Hopefully you can forward it to him, but honestly, hear it, because that's a great song. Maurice, I hope you continue to write in this style. You should be doing all three of these. You should be doing R&B, you should be doing house, you should be doing country, and just all three of the charts, you know?
That's actually my goal right now. It's like I'm trying to, you know, I want to, you know, mesh all three of the styles together. Like right now, I host a country night in Hollywood at a country bar called Desert Five Spot. Okay. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm, you know, just introduce, you know, the country lovers to different styles and just show them how all of it all blends together. I want to introduce the R&B lovers to, you know, country and just show them like this all, it all blends together. Like, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you always had all the R&B artists that would cover country songs.
Yep. You know what's crazy? Charlie Parker, in between sets, he would listen to country music. And people would be like, why are you listening to country music? And he'd always say, the stories, man, the story. It's like, it's always been like a blend of influences for a number of decades. So I love that you're, you know, kind of like blending your music and sounds and kind of pushing that influence on people, because it's good. You should. You're great at it. I mean, it's natural. It's just
thank you, man.
Where can people find you if they want to find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at SingingSense3. That's actually my handle for Instagram.
Singing like SINGIN since 3, right?
Yes.
People I know would be like, singing since 3. They're going to forget that G. they're not going to forget that G, but yeah. Singing since 3.
Singing since 3.
What's your website, too, so people can find your music?
MauriceSmithMusic.com is my website. So that way you can find me on, you can find all my handles from there. Like just go to my website.
Well, Maurice, I haven't forgotten about the song that we wrote. It's sitting on an engineer's desk. He's been, but I can't wait to hear more music from you. I can't wait to hear you sing again. We've got to collaborate on more stuff. And thanks for being a guest again on Wake Up Hollywood, man.
Oh, no, I appreciate you having me. I mean, and now that I'm in this whole country land right now, you know, we can blend the blues that you're doing into some country, just bring it all together.
We'll have to collaborate on something, man. It's like,
yes, sir.
You're just always top notch, and I really respect all your musicality and musicianship, and you're just one of the best singers in LA, and I hope you always continue to do this because it really is something special. Never forget it, okay?
Oh, man, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. On behalf of Maurice, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Love, peace, and hair grease. Take care.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.